Great. Well, thank you so much, Malcolm. Thanks for the invite. It's always a joy to be able to share and be with brothers and sisters, and appreciate Malcolm a lot. We've had the joy and the privilege of being able to work with Malcolm, particularly over the last year, in sort of helping with the transition in Thames Valley. Sonia and I have a lot of respect and a lot of time for Malcolm and Penny, and we really respect their faith and the wisdom, and we've benefited so much from being able to spend time with Malcolm a lot last year, and we've enjoyed that so much. So Malcolm's asked us to share on, I think the title is Building Relationships with TJ and Sonia. So I don't know if that means you're going to be building relationships with us. I hope that is the case. And but I think what was implied or desired is that we talk about building relationships. And so a little bit about us first. I became a Christian in the London Campus Ministry. It was back in 2011. And I moved to Singapore in 2015. And then we started dating, and we eventually got married 2017, and we moved to Indonesia, to Jakarta, and we went into the paid full-time ministry. So we were helping to start a young professionals ministry with the Jakarta church, and we weren't sure how long we were going to be there, maybe 1 year, maybe 2 years, and we ended up staying for 7 years and having two children. And finally, we felt God calling us back to the UK, and we're now in Thames Valley. We've been here for a little over a year, and in that time, we've been kind of taking on the baton or the reins from Tim and Chevy, who have just led faithfully over the past 25 years in building a church here in Thames Valley. So it's been a real honor to kind of step into leadership of the church, build a leadership team, and it's nerve-wracking, and it's scary. And we're figuring things out as we go, but it's also exciting to be on that journey. And so when, you know, on the topic of building relationships, we can only share what we've seen and what we've learned and what we're trying to figure out. By no means have we found a formula that, that can, the magic secret sauce that we can just, say, try this and this will work. I believe God works through faith. He works through his people in community. And so we're just going to share some of our thoughts, some of our observations, and some practicals and sort of case studies, and hopefully it will be of some help. We don't have a lot of time, so I'm going to kind of, typically how we do things is I do my stream of consciousness, and Sonia steps in and corrects me and directs me and refines what I'm saying. So Sonia's just going to jump in when she sees that I'm straying off the path. But I'm just going to share a little bit about building an everyday community within our church and being good neighbors. So that's kind of what I wanted to talk about tonight. What was Jesus's ministry strategy? You know, what can we learn from Jesus? That's really what this is about, I believe, is equipping Watford to really check and see whether the way that we're doing ministry is the way that Jesus did ministry. We all want that. We all want to see the world impacted by the gospel. We want to see people's hearts changed by the gospel. We want to do ministry the way that Jesus did ministry, the way the early church did ministry. And so I think it's always good to go back and ask ourselves that question. Malcolm shared this scripture at the beginning in Luke 5, and I'll just share little excerpts from it. The Pharisees were there, and they complained to his disciples, "Why do you eat and drink with tax collectors and sinners?" And Jesus answers, "It's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance." I think when we look at Jesus's ministry, one thing that's really clear is that he built a powerful sense of belonging for those that arguably had the least right to belong. We can look at other examples of that, whether it's the Samaritan woman at the well, or whether it's, healing the Roman centurion's servant, the miracle of driving out demons in the Decapolis, Mark 5. Healing of Canaanite woman's daughter, the parable of the Good Samaritan. You know, the list can go on and on. Think of your own examples in Jesus's ministry. Jesus clearly had a mission and an agenda to create belonging and acceptance where it was not offered by society and the culture that he was in. I think that was a really important strategy of Jesus' ministry, was break down barriers and build a sense of belonging. People that really had no right to be around religious elite, let alone the Son of God, were clearly having a great time around Jesus. When we look at Jesus's ministry, I think if we could summarize the pathway that Jesus was bringing people on, it was a pathway of belong, believe, and become. And I think without, I'm not going to try and be critical of any of our churches in particular, but I think if we can talk about a culture that existed in the past, perhaps it looked a little bit more like believe, behave, belong. So we get people to study the Bible, we get them to behave according to a set of values that we think constitutes what a disciple should be, and then we allow them to belong in our communities. And if you were to bring someone into the community who clearly didn't fit the standard of behavior, the lines were clearly drawn, and that person would know that they are not a belonging member of that community, right? And we draw membership lists, and and you're in or you're out, and I don't want to get into all of the ins and outs and pros and cons of all of that, but I think it's worth just really looking at our church, our community, and asking ourselves the question: is this a church for Christians, or is this a church for the world? Is this a church for the healthy, or is this a church for the sick? When people come in that maybe we might feel uncomfortable about, how could they genuinely feel a sense of belonging? Think of one of your friends who you think is least likely to become a Christian. I have a friend called Dan, and when I look at his life, I think this guy probably won't become a Christian just because his behavior doesn't look anything like what a disciple would, in my opinion, look like. But if Dan came into my church, would he feel a sense of belonging? Would he feel accepted? Would he feel loved? Would he feel welcomed? Would people have him round the table at dinner? Would they listen to his life? That's the question I think we need to be asking ourselves. Build belonging. The second thing Jesus, I think, did quite strategically was that he built locally. Most of Jesus's ministry was in Galilee, a region he grew up in and knew well. Now, obviously, he worked towards Judea, and that's where he had the greatest opposition. But if you look at most of Jesus's miracles and impact, it was in the region of Galilee, in those areas listed there, where Jesus either grew up or spent a lot of time. And it was culturally a very mixed place of religious and Gentile people. Jesus built locally. He did a lot of ministry around the table, a lot of dinners, a lot of drinking wine, a lot of connecting. One of the things we learned in Jakarta, and it was just so simple, it was a ministry philosophy of one of our mentors, and he would say this: no relationship, no ministry. And it was just so simple. But he said, if you have no relationship with someone, you cannot minister to them, you cannot help them, you cannot tell them, what you feel they should change in. It's just no point. No relationship, no ministry. Jesus did a lot of relationship building around the table. Church is not just where we meet on Sunday. It's who we have for dinner at our house as well.
And I think just how Jesus is and was, in the Gospels and still is with us today, I think he always operated from loving the person, connecting with them. I was even, in a Bible study the other day, and we were all just thinking about who Jesus was. And what we were saying is, it could have been very humble and enough for him to just be a human. And be with us in that way. But the fact that he was a human and he walked with us and chose to build relationships is so incredible because that involves serving people,
Boarding
that
in progress.
lowering yourself in such a different, a more intimate way. And so I think that's a kind of rule of thumb that TJ and I have operated, whether it comes to working with our leadership team or speaking the truth in love to others or reaching out to our neighbors and loving people. You can only get far as the depth of your relationship and the trust that you built. And I think what that has done to TJ and I is we have allowed this process to really mold us to be relatable to a wide group of people, because we've realized that, well, we won't be able to relate to everyone, but we can always build a relationship with them. And when you choose that path, you are able to see that you can become whoever Jesus wants you to be in order to love and to relate and to help a person feel trust. So that's kind of just how we really operate in terms of how we work with people, is we don't bring anything. Even, if people tell us, oh, can you please go speak to this person? You're, the pastor of the church, or, whether it's a neighbor or another person, we don't do anything until we've built a relationship with someone.
Exactly. Connect before you try to correct is something else. So I
Good
kind of
for
stick. Good for
parenting
parenting, good for in life. Most lessons from parenting are good for life. Build locally. Sometimes we end up taking Christians out of the neighborhoods that they live in so that they can do church in a place that they don't live in. And that was a we noticed that that was a practice of Thames Valley, which I'm not saying that that's was wrong, because Thames Valley is geographically a very spread out region, and I think the Christians needed to come together to connect and get strengthened. But the early church didn't really do that. It's clear that they were very much doing their church, doing life in the place that they lived and worked. They were in the marketplace. They were in the temple courts. They were going to ha from house to house. I think it's a shame when we take Christians out of their neighborhoods and teach them that church is a place where you go to outside of where you live. And I think right now we're in this transition in Thames Valley where we're trying to figure out, and by no means have we figured it out yet. We're praying for God to really direct this, but we're trying to figure out how to mobilize the Christians in the places where they live, in the villages and in the towns that they actually live in, and how to engage meaningfully in those communities in which they spend most of their time, or have the most potential to impact. In the UK, according to a study, 1 in 10 UK adults, equivalent to around 5 million people, don't know any of their neighbours by name. This increases to 1 in 6 people aged under 25 and 1 in 8 aged 25 to 34, right? In a study that was carried out by Aviva Home Security Awareness, at which point they will sell you a home insurance policy. But it says something about the way that society might be moving, in that we're becoming increasingly individualistic, increasingly isolated,
Interesting.
and yet social media tricks us into thinking that we are more connected than ever, when in reality we're not. Who is your neighbor? The famous question posed to Jesus when Jesus mentions the greatest commandments: love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. And we know the story that Jesus goes on to tell the parable of the Good Samaritan. It was the least likely person that ends up being the neighbor in the story. But who is it that God is directing you to love, to accept, to build relationship with? I know for me, I have to challenge myself to really pray for God to direct me to people in my community, people around where I live. And it's not easy, because that means that I have to get involved in things that are going on locally. And that's something we're trying to do here. And I'll share a bit more about that at the end of this time together. But I think building locally was a clear strategy of Jesus's. The last thing is build influence. When we look at the people that Jesus influenced, there was the crowd. There were crowds of people that followed Jesus, and he taught. He taught the Sermon on the Mount. That may have been to a crowd. He may have taken his disciples aside and just talked to his disciples. Depends how you want to interpret that. But there were clearly times where Jesus addressed crowds. There was the community of the 70. There were the committed 12 disciples. There was the core, Peter, James, and John. And then there was the celestial, or Jesus and his relationship with the Father. And I think when we think about influence, we're trying to move people along from being in the crowd to feeling a sense of belonging and feeling part of the community, to really coming to faith and becoming a disciple and someone who's committed to the mission, and then transforming and becoming someone who's really a core and who belongs to a core team and is really invested in the church. I think Jesus had, at every level, Jesus had a strategy for how he was influencing those groups of people. And I think as leaders, we need to know who we're influencing in the crowd. We need to know who we're influencing the 70, in the 12, and in the core, in the three. I think it's really important that we have that our relationship with God flows into influencing at each of these levels, and that we really do have a core group that we're working with. Jesus clearly saw it was important to have kind of a special relationship with Peter, James, and John. He took only them up for the transfiguration. When he raised Jairus' daughter from the dead, he only allowed Peter, James, and John, along with the girl's parents, to witness that. In the Garden of Gethsemane, he took all of the disciples to Gethsemane, but invited Peter and James and John to go deeper in the garden with him, and he expressed his deepest sorrow to them. I think we need to have influence with a core that we are equipping and training. Just to close, I want to share a couple of case studies of, I think, building relationships in community. So we went to Jakarta in 2017, and we helped to start a YoPros community, which are young professionals, English speaking community in the church there. And the goal was really to help young adults whose first language was English, in a church where the church only really spoke Indonesian in their meetings, to help them find a community where they can connect, find the gospel, and become disciples. And we really focused on creating a sense of belonging for them, a place where they could build friendship, a place where they could meet in people's homes. It was really a community where we did life together. We did a lot of fun activities, sports, eating together, and we met where people actually lived and worked. So we met locally. So it was close to where people worked, and with the traffic in Jakarta, that was also just very important logistically for people to be able to get to where you are. But we also chose people in the community and raised them up because they had the ability to influence. And it was definitely an 80-20 rule where 80% of the people coming to our events were by 20% of or even perhaps more skewed than that, because there were a few people that just have the gift of being able to influence. And I think we really leaned on them to bring friends. And we started something called a GEM talk. So the ministry was called GEM, GEM, which was God, each other, and mission. And we would do these things called GEM talks, which was kind of like a TED talk, where we'd have a short talk by a speaker and then discussion groups. And as we started doing those, more and more people started coming out. And we started off with sort of 12 disciples running those, and quickly we were meeting in three different houses on the same evening, with sometimes 200 people coming out across those three different locations. And those still continue today. And that's kind of a known thing for young adults who want to find a church, that GEM Talk is a place where they can go and find belonging and community. But back in here in Thames Valley, and maybe Sonia can share a bit about this, another thing that we're really excited about is a family group here in Thames Valley, which is six young married couples who all live in the same village. And they all chose to live close together so
Oh,
that they can
goodness.
be involved in each other's lives. And part of that was because they saw that so much of the church was just so spread out that actually they really wanted to see what it's like to live a few doors down from each other. So if you go to the village of Wargrave, and you go to the high street, you will go past five disciples' houses. And we live about 5 minutes down the road from there. And the strategy really is be involved in each other's life, create kingdom relationships that are visible to the community in which we live, and invite people to join that. And so God is, I think, really working through that and blessing that. And the influence of that is that people know that our church has a lot of people in that village, and that we do things in the village together. When we go to the coffee shop, they know that our church meets there, not meets there for meetings, but we just gather there to hang out. And as a result, we currently have one of the neighbors who lives in the village who's been coming out to church and studying the Bible. And it's very exciting because it's the first, well, it's the second sort of person who's seen the church who's decided to come out and study. So so that's kind of exciting.
I think it's been really incredible because when it comes to relationships, just to think of some practicals in these case studies, we see the formation of community and people coming and wanting to know God when many people work together. It really does take a village, and it's so special to see that it's not just one person that makes the impact, right? But it's we plant, we water, but God makes it grow. And I think I love where we've come from in Jakarta. We came from a much bigger congregation, but what they had was so cool because they had a ministry for empty nesters, where all the empty nesters would more like retired people would that had more time would be together and would form a community and would use that to reach out. There were people that were in work like still working, having their own business, and so they would use their Saturdays to enjoy time with each other and invite people in their neighborhood. And they would be so creative. It would be from a secular parenting class to baking together to going bowling. It was anything that would attract people to connection. And what is so special is, in the world, there's always an agenda when you want to, when people meet, right? It's always, usually, it's always, what can I gain from this person? But what's so special about God's kingdom is that we love and we people are impacted by the difference that we can bring because of Jesus. Weird.
Is that, yeah, keep,
Yeah.
yeah.
Okay. And so one of the things I just wanted to share was just some practicals that have really, I think, been life-changing for me. And that's just the power of praying together as a group, praying specifically in your village and in your area, that God will really show you the people that He wants you to love and wants you to bring and to know Him and to know Jesus. And so I remember praying that, going on prayer walks with a lot of the Wargrave women. And now we have someone studying the Bible in the village, and we're reaching out to her husband. But she's been so transformed by the gospel already. And then we also prayed for one of our neighbors closer to us, who's a bit older. And she's an Indian lady that was a neighbor of someone that basically is it also lives close to us in this, like closer to Reading. And she's going to get baptized at the end of the month, and it's, I think what is so encouraging is just the faith, and just the answered prayer. I think one of the things that we've seen was with, in building this kind of village family life, the reason why being local is so important is, we do life together. So we have a lot of meals. I think we've talked about not having, TJ and I came from a different culture, but we talked about not having Asian culture or British culture to lead us, but to have Christ's culture. And with Christ, it's a lot about prioritizing relationships and not being and being generous with our time. And so I think sometimes when we came into certain cultures in family groups where you only met when the church had an event. And I think it was just very hard to build relationships that way because there was a lack of friendship. And so when you meet often, what happens is these communities form very easily because you're planning the next meal, you're planning just the next walk together. And so it's just very frequent. And what a rule of thumb that we did was frequent, but very short times. So like 1 hour here, 1 hour there. We wouldn't spend 3 hours having coffee with someone. We can't because
You have young
we
kids,
have two
but
toddlers. So
also people, once you spend 3 hours with someone, they probably don't want to see you for another 2 months.
exactly.
So
But we just
if you're I'm best in small doses. I don't know about you guys,
yeah.
but
But yeah. And then the last thing I would also share is besides prayer, and those little like tips. The thing that really was transformative for me was Philippians 3, where Paul talks about, I want to know Christ and to know his resur him. Let me just read it. You have to go help with it, maybe. Sorry, our daughter's crying. I want to know Christ, yes, to know the power of his resurrection and participation in his sufferings, becoming like him in his death, and somehow attaining to the resurrection from the dead. So I think what's so important was Paul's goal throughout this letter of in Philippians. It's so much of knowing who Jesus is throughout every situation that he goes through. And I think some of the things that can prevent us from forming close relationships is we get triggered by people. If I'm just being honest, we are not either aware of our triggers or we get triggered. And so it's really about also managing how we respond to people that don't naturally click with us, and seeing that this is a way for me to know Christ in a deeper way. This person in my life, even though I don't necessarily connect with them, it's an opportunity for me to reflect Jesus. And so that mindset has really helped me to, whenever I feel something uncomfortable, you know, God is helping me grow in some way, speaking the truth in love, reflecting on my own issues. And it's honestly just been a joy. And so building relationships has, if anything, it's transformed me. And I always say that when I'm reaching out to someone or I'm with the women, where we will say that no matter what happens in this Bible study, it's going to change us, because no matter what, how the person responds to the gospel, it's going to transform who we are when we love like Jesus and want to know him in the process of forming relationships. So,
So I just before we close up, I'll just go back to this slide. I think one of the things as a church we're probably quite good at is getting people to move from being in the community to being committed, which I think is doing Bible studies with people. I think that's a real strength of our church in that we really encourage people to know the scriptures and study them out with people, help them to become disciples. People move from community to committed. I think where we're not so good is moving people from the crowd to the community and from the committed to the core. I feel one thing we're trying to figure out right now in Thames Valley is how do we get people to who are in community, who are skeptics, who are, hear about the church, maybe don't seem that interested. How do we get them into the community? How do we remove those barriers? One of the things that the Church of England has done very well in is the Alpha course. And that the Alpha is a great way, I think, that people who want to learn about Christianity, who don't want to go to church, can join a group and learn about Jesus. And I think we need to think about things like that.
Can I
But
create one thing?
I think how do people move from, one sec, sorry, son. How do people move from committed to the core is how do people grow as disciples in our church? I think we're good at baptizing people, but not so good at helping them grow towards maturity. So I think one of the things we need to look at when we talk about building relationships is the pathway of a disciple, starting from a skeptic to a seeker to a Christian to a growing Christian to the core or a leader. To a mature Christian, whatever that pathway looks like, what are we doing as a church to help influence at each of those levels? And we
Good
saw
point.
that one of the strengths of being in the Jakarta Church, particularly, I would say, is the crowd to the community, because you could go to a Bible discussion, which was really just a meeting at someone's house, and it would be an amazing time, and you wouldn't be able to know who's a disciple and who's not. You'd just go there and
Everyone's
everyone would be
close.
eating and close and having a great time. And if you had to go away asking who do you think is a disciple, you wouldn't know who's a disciple because everyone's equally loved and accepted. And it was just a beautiful community that was being built there. So I think that's something that I just wanted to add. And we're going to close up here just by summarizing what we've talked about. Build belonging, build local, and build influence. How can you create a sense of belonging? What we need to change in your church to create a belonging culture. Who in your church are you doing everyday life with? If we're talking about building locally, how are you getting connected with your community? And finally, when we talked about influence, how do we move people from skeptic to seeker to committed to core? What is that pathway of discipleship look like? So there's some thoughts. There's probably quite a lot there to digest, but
Yeah. And I
do you
think
want to?
I was just thinking something that crossed my mind last week when we were, like I said, we were in a Bible study with one of our neighbors. I think we were talking a lot about what we have in like with the sisters. We were talking a lot about what about the church and what we had, what like memories that we had together and how long we've known each other. And I know that that's very helpful and wonderful and special, but I think it can also actually be kind of isolating if a visitor comes in and they see this group of people that's known each other for 20 years and they're the only one that doesn't have that. And so I think what I was thinking in my mind is I've got to actually bring this up with the people that are our age. And it's really helping people feel like when they come in and when they're new, that they don't feel left out. You know, that's very important. And so it's part of building, it's part of the belonging aspect, you know. So just thought of that.
Brilliant. We'll close up there and we'll hand back over to our wonderful MC, Malcolm Cox, whose initials are MC.
MC by name, by nature, I don't know. But thank you, TJ. Thank you, Sonny. That's fantastic material, fantastic insight into the heart of Jesus and God.